morning to you.
This is the Mental Noon Show on Highland Radio with Donal Kavanagh, frantically just trying to remember how everything works, having been away for a few days. It's a Tuesday morning. It is indeed the eve of All Hallows, Samhain in the Irish tradition, and a happy Halloween to all, I'm sure. That'll be reflected over the course of the day's programming and on the show as well. Of course, I heard Kevin play Thriller not that long ago, and I thought, yeah, for the day that's in it, absolutely. We have a very busy show lined up as always, but we value and we invite your comments, your perspectives, your views on the stories of the day or indeed the issues you would like to see discussed. You can text us on 086 60 25000, that number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us at 074 91 25000. Caroline producing and taking your calls on the show this morning. You can also, of course, use social media at Highland Radio on X, Highland Hub on Facebook. We are, of course, broadcasting, so you can watch the show unfold on our social media channels and indeed on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, as well. And you can, of course, comment comments at highlandradio.com is the email address. You can use that one as well. So plenty of ways to get in touch with the programme this morning. We'll begin with a look at the newspapers. Irish Independent, and this is a story you'll have heard Donna Marie mention on the news over the course of the morning. Thousands face leaving their homes under coastal erosion policies. Thousands of homeowners and businesses could have to abandon their properties in the coming decades because of policies to deal with rising sea levels and coastal change. There's more details inside. Farming, turning a blind eye to illegal slurry spreading must stop, according to Minister Charlie McConnell. And Ten Hag comments echo the worst of Ole and Mourinho. That's an issue on Sport in the back. And you can check that out on your Irish Independent this morning. Irish Times this morning. Israeli forces free woman held hostage during night in Gaza. Israel expands operations inside Gaza with tanks active on Strip's main highway. Human suffering in Gaza shocking, says International Committee on the Red Cross. And story by Mark Weiss in Jerusalem, a writer with the Jerusalem Post. It tells us that Israeli special forces operating in Gaza freed a woman soldier hostage. Private Ori Megladish was serving as a lookout on the Gaza border when she was seized by Hamas gunmen. I suppose really what you're told in stories like this is true. But what you're not told is the actual human cost of an operation like that. And one of the main problems in somewhere like Gaza is what would be regarded as collateral damage by the Israeli forces in these cases is very often massive, and can't help but wonder how much collateral damage was there during that rescue operation last night. Molly Martins and father in plea deal over Corbett killing. Molly Martins and her father Thomas Martins agreed a plea deal with prosecutors in the US to accept a lesser manslaughter charge over the killing of Limerick man Jason Corbett in 2015. In the sentence hearing that followed, defence counsel for Ms. Martins told the court that she believed Mr. Corbett had killed his first wife and the same fate could befall her. And that's Martin Wall's story they're writing from Lexington in North Carolina. And the other story on the front of the Irish Times this morning, of course, you've been hearing it on the news over the course of the morning. Paul Cullen's story, review ordered into scans at Letterkenny Hospital. Hundreds of scans are being reviewed at Letterkenny University Hospital after an internal check found more than a third of a locum radiologist's work contained errors. The contract was terminated within 10 days as a result of the concerns raised, and the senior member of staff has raised questions, according to internal correspondence, which has been seen by the Irish Times. That's on the Irish Times this morning. You've been hearing that story and more of that to come, of course, on the news over the course of the day and beyond. Irish Daily Mail this morning. Families anguish as the Martins agree plea deal. And we've heard this already on the Times this morning, and this was covered indeed in national papers yesterday as well. Families anguish as the Martins agree deal. Molly and her dad could walk free. Voluntary manslaughter to replace murder conviction. Sentencing hearing ongoing. The plea deal has been described as heartbreaking by Jason Corbett's family. Molly Martins and her father agreed the planned retrial schedule for next month will now no longer take place. A sentence hearing is underway. Now, that sentencing hearing is expected to take around about 2 weeks. And things are going to be said over the course of that hearing that will be deeply distressing, one would have thought, for the Corbett family. Irish son, exactly the same story. No retrial for pair. Molly and dad accept Jason killing plea deal. Also, cops sorry to Maddie parents. Portuguese cops have apologised to Madeleine McCann's parents 16 years after she went missing. Kate and Jerry McCann were made suspects after Maddie 3 vanished in Praia da Luz in 2007. Officers have now flown from Lisbon to say sorry, and the full story is inside the Irish Sun. Irish Daily Mirror, Corbett plea deal, guilty of killing Jason. Father and daughter admit voluntary manslaughter of Irish man in US. The same story there. And the final tragedy, friends reveal star Matthew had been in a happy place. Also, again, that Madeleine McCann story, Maddie Hope, as police say sorry. Irish Daily Star this morning, the main headline again, Molly admits Jason's killing. Martins and father accept manslaughter wraps in US plea deal. Wenger sticks boot into United. That's one of the stories on the back page. Arsene Wenger, I presume it's Arsene Wenger. Just take a peek and look. And yeah, it is Arsene Wenger. No spirit, no quality, no hope, says Wenger about Man United. And also another story here. We want justice for man who lost leg in cop car collision. Hundreds of people took to the streets of Dublin yesterday afternoon to call for justice for a delivery driver who lost part of his leg when he was hit by a Garda car. Friends of Brazilian João Henrique Ferraria gathered in O'Connell Street after Saturday's accident on the M50. Now, before we do anything else, let's go to line one. As I said, we'll hopefully have more on that Letterkenny University Hospital story over the course of the programme. We can actually go to line one and have more on the story right now, joined by Paul Cullen, the health editor at the Irish Times, author of that story. Paul, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
Paul, correspondence that you've seen and have reviewed have shown this locum consultant's contract was terminated as a result of the concerns that were raised. A serious story.
Yeah, I became aware of internal correspondence within the hospital wherein a senior member of staff had said that they had raised concerns about the work of this locum radiologist who had been working in the hospital for a very short time. His contract had been terminated in 10 days. And I did contact Sailta Healthcare Group in relation to that, and they confirmed that this review was underway. As you mentioned, it concerned a locum consultant radiologist who worked for about 7 days in the hospital and in that space carried out hundreds of scans. And what I saw from the correspondence was that the senior member staff who had concerns about this person's work had done a check, their own check, after being dissatisfied with the response from the hospital itself, and found a 37% error rate in the scans that were done.
There's also some concern expressed by the person that raised the alarm here, that initial concerns they raised, they felt that the locum's work wasn't being checked properly and they had issues about the way the situation was being dealt with internally.
Yeah, I think the locum had gone by that stage, but what's clear from the correspondence is that the senior member staff who identified the issues with the locum's work contacted the hospital management several times in relation to his concerns, their concerns, and did it a second time after being dissatisfied but not hearing, and then was prompted to go off and carry out their own checks into the departed locum's work. And as I said, there's mention of that the person looked at 238 x-rays and 66 ultrasound scans. And, of course, there would have been CT scans done as well. I don't know the number of those. That check turned up an error rate, according to this person, of 37%. So in front of that, the hospital has obviously since that corresponds, which dated from several months ago, has begun its own processes. Yeah. And in the statement that it gave me, it referred to obviously it has a what it calls the clear pathway for addressing. Yeah.
And I can read that statement. We have a statement ourselves from the hospital. I would presume word for word this is probably exactly the same statement you have.
Exactly.
The response response we got was Letterkenny University Hospital can confirm that a local radiologist employed on a short-term contract in September 2023 had this contract terminated within 10 days as a result of concerns being raised regarding the standard of their work. During this time, the consultant had undertaken 7 days of clinical activity. A full review of the relevant clinicians' work is underway to provide assurance regarding patient safety. The Hospital Quality and Patient Safety Service has a clear pathway in addressing any concerns raised regarding clinical care, and this pathway is currently being followed. In the event that any cases of misdiagnosis come to light, patients will be contacted with full open disclosure and appropriate arrangements put in place for follow-up care in accordance with natural policy. As you said yourself, Paul, pretty much a fairly standard statement, the likes of which we've all seen several times before. Given that concerns had been raised by the person within the hospital that had these concerns, and they felt the initial concerns weren't acted on, is there a possibility that some of this locum consultant's work and potential mistakes happened after concerns were first raised?
I suppose it's possible, but I mean, whatever the reason for the initial termination of the person's contract and the commissioning of a review, whether it was prompted by the concerns of the senior member staff internally or eventually by the hospital management, it does seem that the issue is being acted on relatively quickly. And while they didn't give a time span for this review, one can only assume that it will be done fairly quickly. As well.
And presumably any
limited enough in its impact.
Presumably, but I think a review will bring this to light.
Yeah, I think the broader issue is, I think it highlights the difficulties that Letterkenny, I'm sure you're aware yourself, has in recruiting staff.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you wouldn't be employing locums if you already had permanent staff. And, obviously the quality of locums, I think this wasn't the only one about which question was raised. That really is an ongoing and chronic issue for the hospital.
Yeah, and we know, and you indeed reflect this in your own story as well, that both local GPs, over 70 of them, and consultants at the hospital, 11 of those, have independently written to the Health Minister, to SAILTA and to hospital management, expressing grave concern about the hospital and indeed the safety of their patients. Paul, I suppose the next thing that happens here is going to be a review. It'll be an internal review initially. Do you believe there is any chance that this may become an external review and that the wider SAILTA, the group, will become involved and perhaps even higher up to the department itself?
Yeah, I suppose it's possible, but it really depends on the outcome of the review and the impact of any misdiagnosis, if there were, on patients and the amount of time that would have elapsed. I'd be hopeful that it's time limited, but you can't be too sure.
And in the meantime, I suppose inevitably people are going to be wondering, am I one of those for whom a mistake has been made? And I suppose for them, more than anyone else, we just hope that this is addressed quickly. And if there are, as the statement says, any cases of misdiagnosis or scans being misread, that they're addressed and the people notified as quickly as possible.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Paul, thanks very much indeed. That's Paul Cullen, Health Editor at the Irish Times. Paul broke that story this morning in the paper about the locum consultant whose contract was terminated and whose work is now being reviewed after a mistake rate of 37% was detected. Paul, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. It is Halloween and lots happening around Donegal and the wider Northwest, and a lot happening in many areas. So just keep an eye on anything that's going on in your particular area, and may everyone have a really good day and really enjoyable and safe night. Now, speaking of safety, it's emerged that roads policing units in some areas have been further reduced over the course of the last month, with the numbers in the roads policing units now 655 across the country, compared to 1,046 in 2009. One of the divisions in which those numbers are down, we are told, is the division in Donegal. Joined on the line by Susan Gray, who's chair of the Road Safety Group Park. Susan, good morning.
Good morning, Donald.
Susan, you have long been an advocate of increasing road policing numbers and ensuring there are more Gardaí on the streets. This would seem to be the exact opposite of what you believe needs to happen.
Yes, and it's heartbreaking, Donal, when we found out yesterday by chance that there's further reductions in roads policing. As you said, we had over 1,000 in 2009, and now we're down to 655. That's an absolute disgrace. That's a reduction of 391, almost 400 less Gardaí in our roads policing units. And this year, as you know, is a horrific year for road deaths. We have 157 to date. And that's 35 more than the same time last year.
And a thing we hear over and over again, Susan, is people will say to us, oh, yeah, there was a road safety day or a road safety awareness campaign. And they'll say, I drove from one end of the country to the other twice last week and I didn't see a single Gartha. I didn't see a single Gartha car. I didn't see a single GoSafe van. I have seen nothing on the streets to suggest that there is a speed operation taking place.
Yes, we're hearing that all the time, Donal. And there may be loads of checkpoints and bank holiday weekends, but what about the other weekends? We have to have visible Gardaí out there every single week to send out a clear message that the government and the Gardaí are actually serious about reducing deaths and serious injuries on our roads at the present minute. How could anybody have confidence?
We're told by Gardaí over the course of the holiday weekend there were 173 arrests on suspicion of driving under the influence of drink or drugs. 1,000 were detected speeding, and there were 324 fixed charge penalty notices. 56 arrests over the course of a 24-hour period alone. Those figures are concerning.
Yeah, it just shows you, Donald, the extent of the problems we have out there. And people that are road safety conscious, and can you imagine the fear they must have when they take to the roads, knowing that there's so many dangerous drivers out there disobeying the laws, and yet at the same time there's a massive reduction in roads policing, Gardaí being assigned to roads policing. That's totally unacceptable. When we wrote to Taoiseach Leo Varadkar in August about our concerns, he voiced the same concerns, and he said he brought them to the attention of the Gardaí Commissioner. Well, Taoiseach, it didn't have much of an effect when in the last 3 months, 23 more Gardaí have gone from roads policing units.
Have you had a chance to meet the Gardaí Commissioner yourself?
No, Gardaí headquarters requested a meeting shortly. Now, due to different dates, we're still trying to work out a date. But it's with the Assistant Commissioner, not with the Gardaí Commissioner. But Paula Hillman, who is the Assistant Commissioner, she told the Transport Committee in September, when TD Allen Dillon asked her, how many members have we got now in roads policing? And she gave a figure of 664. But our figures show less than that. But that's what prompted us to ask Catherine Murphy, the TD, to keep raising the question for us every month to see, to highlight how many Gardaí every month are in roads policing. Now, the last time she asked it in this month, Helen McIntyre, Minister for Justice, gave a figure only covering up to the end of August. She didn't give any figures for September. We couldn't understand. So we delved deeper and we discovered that more were taken out in September. What about November? What about October and November?
And is this because Gardaí numbers...
It's going in the wrong direction all the time, and the road deaths are going in the wrong direction all the time.
Is this because we know Gardaí numbers overall are down and the recruitment isn't keeping pace with resignations and Gardaí leaving the force? Is this a case that people are being taken out of road policing because they're needed for crime investigation, because they're needed for walking the beat, because they're needed for patrols, etc., that Gardaí numbers are down so low that they have to draw from the roads policing section in order to make sure they have sufficient Gardaí in total on the streets, as it were?
I don't know. There's no valid, acceptable excuse for taking valuable Gardaí from our roads policing units, especially in the year that we have, with road deaths rising at an alarming rate. Now, we met with Jack Chambers, Minister Jack Chambers, a few weeks ago, and we put it to him about our concerns about the reductions in roads policing. He assured us that he continually, constantly meets with the Gardaí himself and the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, and RSA, who, by the way, we are not hearing one thing. Why are they not in the media crying out like we are for more members to be assigned? Or at the very least, to stop taking the existing members from roads policing. But Minister Jack Chambers assured us that the Gardaí Commissioner had told them that as recruitment of officers continue, that more Gardaí will be put into roads policing. But we put it to him that 126 Gardaí finished training there on the 13th of October. How many of them have resulted in more Gardaí going into roads policing? He didn't know. So we asked him to ask this question. He said he would, and he'd get back to us, because it's all fine and well saying, as more are recruited, as more are trained, then more will be put into roads policing. But when is it going to be? 2 years' time after they have 500 more Gardaí recruited? Or we need a time, we need confidence that every set of Gardaí that are trained, that will result in some more Gardaí putting into the roads policing. But what we see to date, all that's happening is they're taking more and more valuable Gardaí out of roads policing.
And presumably it's Drew Harris that makes that final decision, because anytime you ask a question of a justice minister or someone working in the government, their answer is inevitably going to be, when it comes to operational matters are a matter for the Gardaí Commissioner. So as far as this question is concerned, you may talk to Jack Chambers, you may talk to Helen McEntee, Catherine Murphy can move all the dull questions that she likes. The reality is, these decisions are going to be made ultimately by Drew Harris in consultation with Paula Hillman and others.
But, Donald, when you think that Artesia, who's in, Leo Varadkar, who's in charge of the whole country, that he would have some power and some, his voice would be heard when he's concerned. He's told us in his reply that he's concerned, and he's put it to the Gardaí Commissioner. Jack Chambers has put it to the Gardaí Commissioner. And what's the result? More and more Gardaí are being taken out of our roads policing units. Now, we're asking for what reason. They say some may be retiring or promotion or whatever. We need a breakdown. How many have been taken out, mainly because they've been transferred to other duties? Because people should... Oh, it's just... It's totally heartbreaking, especially for a group that support families that have lost loved ones in the roads. 157, Donald, this year so far. And we're only at the end of October. 17 has been lost in Tipperary. 15 have been lost in Tipperary alone.
Absolutely.
12 in Galway. Yeah. 12 in Mayo. 7 in Donegal to date, and it was 8 for the whole of 2022.
One of our callers has drawn our attention to a tweet by Vincent Brown in September, who said, given the litany of tragic road deaths recently, it's difficult to understand why the state hasn't insisted on cars being fitted with devices that prevent them being driven beyond the speed limits. This meant many of the recent deaths could have been avoided. Is that something that you would agree with, that maybe it's time to look very seriously at speed regulators in cars and to actually try to introduce a mechanical deterrent as such into actual vehicles themselves?
Donald, the way we look at it, we have laws coming out of ears. They've brought on so many laws. We have enough laws, enforce them. and we need the Gardaí to enforce them. The new speed, the new speed cameras or additional hours for speed cameras that the government has paid $1.2 million to GoSIF for to the end of this year. We welcome them. But that is only tackling speeding drivers. It will never, ever detect drink drivers, drug drivers, disqualified drivers who are, to us, disqualified drivers is a major issue. We discussed it in length with Jack Chambers, the minister, a couple of weeks ago, and he took a lot of notes on our what we think would tackle the number of disqualified drivers on our roads, and he's going to be giving us replies in writing shortly, and he wants another meeting before Christmas. So we have enough laws. We really do. If the laws were enforced, Minister Chambers is talking now about a new road traffic bill that he's proposing this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in draft stage. We had a Road Traffic Act passed earlier this year. There's sections in that, Donald, that are vital to reducing deaths and serious injuries on the roads. They're massive, brilliant sections in that Road Traffic Act. Where are they, Donald?
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting on a shelf. He hasn't signed a commencement order. We brought it up to him, two huge issues that were put into the Road Traffic Act. It was passed, it was signed by the President earlier this year. Why is these sections, life-saving sections, not been commenced? He said that they're working on it. But the way we look at it, for a bill to go through the Dáil, it has five stages to go through the Dáil and the Shannon, right?
Yep.
It takes a year, maybe 2 years. It's debated. There's amendments after amendments, as you know, and we're getting mandatory testing for alcohol testing at crash scenes. We attended every stage of the road traffic bill then.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many amendments. Then it'll go to the Shannon and there'll be amendments. Then it'll have to go back to the Dáil. This would take a year, year and a half, maybe two. And then it'll go to the President to sign. He has to keep it for at least 5 days, look through it all and sign it into law. This was all done in the last Road Traffic Act, and yet there's sections that haven't been commenced. We don't understand why there's further delays. You'd think they'd have all been ironed out during the passage,
and this is me speculating here, but perhaps the issue is that the commissioner is effectively saying to the minister, look, don't sign that in yet because I haven't got the numbers. I have not got the capacity to actually enforce it. So if it's things like mandatory testing at crash scenes, and one would have thought certainly, in fact, I'll be honest, I always assumed there was mandatory testing at crash scenes. And I actually assumed that was the case all along, wrongly, as it turns out. But I suppose the problem is that if the minister is being told by the commissioner, I have not got the numbers to guarantee that this can be done, then maybe they're holding back on the commencement orders until Garda numbers reach a certain level. Now, you're then into a chicken and egg situation because Garda numbers aren't reaching that level. So do you keep on waiting for the numbers to reach the level, or do you sign the commencement order and then effectively force the Garda to put the numbers in so that this can be done?
No, the two sections, Donald, nothing got to do with the Garda. It's giving the insurance companies access to the Minister for Transport's driver file database,
mm-hmm,
on all people that's insured, so that if somebody was disqualified and they're not surrendering their licence and they go into insurance company trying to get insurance and there's nothing on their licence to say they've been disqualified, how would the insurance company know not to insure that person? If they had access to Transport's driver file, that holds all the information, or should, all information on everybody, that how many penalty points you have, if you were disqualified in court and for the length of time and all this. Can you believe that they haven't got access to the driver file in this day and age? But it was put into the Road Traffic Act 2023.
Are there perhaps GDPR concerns and data commission reviews and assessments before that can be put into force, I wonder?
Yeah, but it went through the Doyle, as I said, five stages on the Shannon. Did nobody think of picking up the phone to the data commissioner and say, hold on, will there be a data commission or data problems here? They've put it in. The president has stamped it. And it's a bit late in the day now. If they're, do they bring in these laws just for the perception that they're doing something, knowing that it's never going to work? I don't know. The second thing is linking the national vehicle driver, the vehicle file with the driver file.
Yep.
There's two files in transport. One of them tells the Gardaí everything about the vehicle, when it was last taxed, insured, MCT and all. The other, the driver file, tells the Gardaí everything about the driver, the insurance, the driver license, the penalty points, if they're disqualified and all, if they're a learner driver, if they're a fully qualified driver. These two computers never talk to each other. And the proposal in the new act was to link the two. So it would make the Gardaí's job a lot easier. But these two things have not been commenced. And the minister couldn't tell us when they're going to commence it. So we will keep at this, because this is crucial. If we have less and less Gardaí in our roads, and less Gardaí being assigned to the roads policing, surely the next thing that should be done is ensure that the Gardaí that we do have, that we're not wasting their time, that they have all the technology and that information at their fingertips when they stop a driver at the side of the road, so that the valuable members that we do have don't innocently let a driver say that's disqualified slip the net. So there's loads of things that can be done with the existing laws we have, but there's so many loopholes and errors, and yet when a crisis happens, the government seem to continually say, right, we'll increase penalty points, we'll reduce the speed limits, which are going to take years to do. When the obvious thing is Gardaí on the ground, visible Gardaí on the ground. Everybody will be deterred.
A very important point indeed, and very well made. Susan, thanks very much indeed for now. And we'll obviously be keeping a very close eye on this. But for now, Susan Gray of PARC, the chairperson of that organisation, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Donald.
Okey-doke, Susan, you take care. That's Susan Gray there from PARC. Just a few comments before we go for a break. Caller says, I just want to say there's a bad water leak at Pluck going on at the moment. It's over a month. You'd think the councillor, Irish Water, would fix it. I know there have been ongoing issues in that whole area around. My age was against me. I'm 86, and despite a knee issue, I feel as fit as any young one. I objected, saying I had another 10 years in me. Despite trying to get a second opinion or another consultant, I'm going nowhere. Surely this isn't fair. My age should not be held against me. It's more or less saying to me that I'm at the end of my life and I'm not worth bothering about, and an operation at my age would be a waste of money. That's what they think of the elderly in this country. A very important point. Now, I know there are some consultants might have concerns that at a given age, surgery might be dangerous. That may well be the case, but certainly age should not be a barrier. And if there is a possibility of enhancing your life and improving your quality of life through surgery, then there is no reason why age should be a barrier against having that done. With regards to our conversation earlier with Paul Cullen about the radiologist, a bigger question that needs to be answered here regarding who hired the radiologist in the hospital. Which is an important question, but I suppose if you're doing the hiring, credentials are presented, and there comes a point where you have to take someone on their credentials and on their references, and presumably all that was checked, but it's an important question, and I'm sure that's one of the questions any review will have to look at. How long does it take to see that the present hospital management is not capable of managing the hospital? If this was any other situation, they would have lost their jobs a long time ago. How far are we prepared to let our hospital standards and reputation drop to every day there is a new story? Now, I know some of the politicians that have been commenting on this have said that they believe these are issues that go beyond management. They're issues of funding, they're issues of capacity, and so on and so forth. Now, another caller says on a slightly different issue, the EU migrant scheme is the most important issue facing our country. We should have a referendum to get some leverage in the migrant negotiations. This is primarily about what democracy is about, giving the Irish people a say. That's an issue that's come up before, and no doubt it will come up again. It's 9.42, time for a short break. We'll be back after these. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's 9:45 now. Down syndrome. Times have changed, previous attitudes have been left behind. We are now an enlightened society who treats people with conditions with the respect and the dignity that they deserve. Aren't we? Or are we? Because a story has emerged of some very questionable and distressing comments allegedly made by a healthcare professional recently, joined on the line by Donal, who is the parent of a child with Down syndrome. Donal, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed, thank you. Donal, there was a care plan meeting for your child recently where a number of HSE staff were present to discuss the needs of the child, who is a preschool child at this point in time. Just tell us about the comment that was made by one of the healthcare professionals present at that discussion.
Well, we are on Hale Radio this morning because it's Down Syndrome Awareness Month, and we want to share the important message that our children, you know, need to be treated, you know, properly. At this meeting, a member of the CDNT team described the child. She said, children with Down syndrome learn differently and they can be quite lazy. Everyone will tell you they're lazy. They just are. So that was a comment that was said to us. And it was said on two previous occasions, and we were kind of shocked and we didn't bring it up. We just thought, right, this might just be a slip of the tongue. But then it was brought up like at this, you know, professional meeting, you know, and like all the whole team was there. And it was just the reaction of the whole team, it just seemed to be that this is the attitude within the team, you know, and for that, it's just not a, as you say, an attitude that should prevail now, you know, and as you say, with modern attitudes and stuff towards Down syndrome.
Did you get the feeling that effectively what was being said was, what's the point? They're not going to do it. Or is that the context you believe that this was effectively someone was saying there is no point in doing this because they're just going to be too lazy to conform?
Exactly. And that's exactly the feelings that we had, and that was actually relayed to us that basically there's no point because these children are quite lazy. Everyone will tell you they're lazy, they just are. And that was said, the same thing was said on a few different occasions at different times, but particularly in this meeting when, you know, it was a professional meeting and it was a review of the child, and we were, you know, just dumbfounded that it was actually, you know, and that it wasn't challenged by the other people within the room, you know, was as bad as it actually been said. You know, you would have expected then when the next speaker would have come up that, you know, that have, you know, corrected that mistake. You know, we're all humans, everybody can make a mistake. But, you know, for that to be said and not to be challenged, you know, was basically as this is accepted within the CDMT. You know?
Now, we have requested the HSC for a statement on this. The chairperson of the Donegal Down Syndrome Association is Gina Grant, a longtime friend of this programme and indeed a longtime friend and contributor to Highland Radio. Gina, good morning.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thanks, Gina. Gina, you've obviously spoken to Donal and to others about this in the past number of days. I mean, from your own point of view and from your own experience, I mean, what's your reaction to this?
I was absolutely dumbfounded when I heard this remark was made, and Donald's been very generous and very humane that people make mistakes. A professional who was working in the care of our children in the Children's Disability Network team should not and definitely not have a personal view, but should not have a professional view of this towards any child with a disability. And even if this is a personal view of theirs, it should not be taken into a forum where the family is there, where the child is there, and it is discriminating against the support that that child receives. I think that it's utterly disgraceful. I was dumbfounded, and you know me, Donal, is not very often. I'm shocked or speechless, and I 2023, to have professionals with this attitude and openly say it is beyond disgraceful, but then not to have supports and resources given to a child because of their outdated and ridiculous attitude is discriminational, it's neglect, it's failure, complete failure in the HSE. And I honestly think a review of this person's case file of any child who has Down syndrome should be done. It's disgraceful.
Now, we know the CDNTs are under severe pressure at the moment with understaffing. There have been several discussions about this over the past number of weeks. Indeed, a parents' network has been established specifically to lobby to have the CDNTs expanded. Now, I mean, have you come across this perception? Have you come across this opinion before, Gina? And in your view, if that is the case, do you believe this potentially is being used almost as an excuse not to do too much for the child, as an excuse to effectively put that child to one side and say there's no point?
It takes them off the books, so there, and this doesn't look. 13 years ago, we had to take legal action to get supports for children with Down syndrome in schools. 13 years ago, children with Down syndrome enter in schools. Mainstream schools weren't given supports. Once a child hit five, they were taken off, and the early intervention team, it was then, they were discharged because they were seen as not much more could be done. Fought for change, and change had happened, and there was a lot of progressional therapists and professionals out there who believe differently than this person. But this person to come into this forum of supports and the Children's Disability Network team and have an attitude that any child with a disability does not deserve supports because they believe the extra chromosome causes them to be lazy is disgraceful. And I can't even comprehend that thought process, to say that any person is just deemed lazy whenever they have a visible and actual disability. The extra chromosome, we know through research and we know through factual primary data, have a list of supports that is required, especially in early intervention, and the changes that can help in the development. And I really can't believe it. I was actually, you know, it's gone backwards, the HSE. Instead of this progressional and inclusive attitude and all the buzzwords they're using, they're actually putting children in boxes and failing a whole cohort in our society.
And no one knows better than you, Gina, what can be achieved when a young person with Down syndrome is given the support, when they are given the encouragement, when they are given, sometimes when they're given the kick up the arse that they need. You know what can be achieved. You personally know what can be achieved.
Yes, yes. And I see it through our own members. You see it whenever, if nobody is expecting anything from you and nobody is encouraging you and helping you, anybody, whether they have a disability or not, will fail because they will not feel valued. And to have the people who are supposed to be working to progress our members and to help our children become the people that they deserve a chance to be, have this attitude at such a young age, it's beyond disgraceful. This person is totally discriminating against a young child who has an extra chromosome, who we know needs the help, who we know when the right interventions are given, the potential for that child increases, and they've just blanketed the whole thing. Well, they're lazy. And to have other professionals sit around the table and not challenge that and accept that attitude from their colleague in the Children's Disability Network team is disgraceful.
And Donald, I want to go back to you because, I mean, that point Gina made there is a really, really important one. Your child at this point in time is preschool. What happens now? What happens in the next 6 months to a year to 2 years is going to be absolutely crucial for the rest of your child's life, because the lessons your child learns now, the support your child gets now, and the encouragement your child gets now is going to, as it were, form the foundation for the way they develop in the coming years. And if that is stunted now because of the opinion of an individual, then your child is going to suffer long term as a result.
Absolutely. You know, the mantra all the time is early intervention, you know, and that is crucial. And we were told the team backed up that because he has Down syndrome, he is being excluded. If he didn't have Down syndrome, he would have been given a program to work towards. But because he has Down syndrome and he's not meeting the age related expectations, he's not worried about it. If a normal person not meeting the age expected standards would automatically be given help and interventions. But he has been denied this because he has Down syndrome and there's lower expectations.
One of our callers says, "My heart goes out to Donal. I had a CDNT meeting last week regarding my daughter, and an hour later I came out with no sense of hope. I have had comments previously from this team. I very clearly voiced my opinions and made it clear that not only my child, but all children deserve to be treated equally and to have the service meet the needs of the child and not the child meet the needs of their service. These people need to realise that at the end of the day, us parents know our children the best."
Exactly, and we're not looking for the earth, the moon and the stars. We're just basically looking for, you know, a simple set of goals. We wanted like standard goals set, so we give us a target as parents to work towards, you know, and like we will, and all parents, you know, will work the best they can. But we just need a bit of guidance. We're not professionals in this area, and this is where we look to the CDNT, you know, to give us professional help. And, you know, it's disappointing when you just, you know, hit a brick wall, you know, and the fact that they have Down syndrome, they're not going to accept this help, you know, which brings into question just the CDNT's attitude. They're supposed to be the body that we look to for help in this area. And we've been, you know, our child has been let down, probably lots of other children, by discussions that we're having.
Gina, as chair of the Donegal Down Syndrome Association, you'll no doubt be discussing this with senior officials from the HSC. You know them well, they know you well. Are you hopeful to get anything out of those discussions? And as you said, ultimately perhaps hopeful that a review of these comments will be embarked on and hopefully this issue rectified?
Well, genuinely would want more awareness training for children. Teams that are working in the disability sector, if they don't have disability awareness, what hope does society have? We also would love to have a review of the case files of these professionals who are working with children with Down syndrome, because if this is across the board, then we have a big crisis on our hands. These people are working in the disability sector, and to have such a discriminatory view on any person with a disability is beyond disgraceful. I would hope a verbal warning and above will go to this person. I would also hope that the other people that are working with this person will pull them in line and say this attitude is not appropriate, that the management will look down on this. I know that we have a crisis with therapists and everything else in the HSE, and I know the struggles they have getting staff, but if the staff they have are at this level, then they have a bigger crisis on their hands than employment. This is beyond disgraceful. And any other sector of society that was treated like this, there would be uproar and hell to pay. But we just want to acknowledge now that we are asking the HSE and the management to take this in line, to meet with us and the family, and to have a review of the case files of everybody that has Down syndrome that is in the CDNT. It's disgraceful. It is. I can't even believe that it's happening, that we're having this discussion, Donal. I can't believe it.
Gina Grant, chairperson of the Donegal Down Syndrome Association, and Donal, the father of the child about whom this comment was made. Thank you both indeed very much for speaking to us on the programme this morning. We've asked the HSE for a statement as well, and as soon as we get a statement from them, we'll obviously be bringing it to you. But in the meantime, Gina and Donal, thank you both very much indeed, and good morning.
This comment was made about all persons who have Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Not just about this particular child, which I just wanted that clarified. They said that all people with Down syndrome.
Yeah. And
okay, thanks, Donal.
Gina and Donal, thank you both very much indeed.